almost cut my hair. It happened just the other day. It's getting kind of long. I could have said it was in my way.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash for your listening pleasure on this Monday afternoon, another edition of the Lunch Special. I'm your host, Bird, and here today with, it's Santa Clara County, correct?
Correct.
And you're going to need to get on the headphones and real close to that mic, too. I'm sitting here with a judge, so watch out. Watch out. Your honoree. Can I say your honoree?
That's okay. Whatever makes you
okay.
Happy.
Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge Douglas K. Southard. Welcome to KZSU. Get real close to that mic.
Thank you very much.
Douglas, thank you for taking time out and coming in. We want to thank Deputy Kuhn for setting this whole thing up, too. And thanks for the lunch. Also, the other connection, Stanford graduate, 1970. How's it feel to be back on the farm?
Well, I'm back here quite often since I work pretty much across the street at the Palo Alto Superior Court.
Do you come back to campus quite a bit?
I do. And as a matter of fact, over the years, I've done a variety of activities with sports, like with the Angel Field Agents Running Club. And
really?
Yeah. Done some, got friends over here, used the gym facilities illegally probably for years.
Don't say that.
Yeah, they finally kicked us out.
Did they really?
Yeah.
You're a judge. You could, but you could, you know.
I don't have any
pull some strings.
Yeah, don't, no connection.
You're a Stanford grad. They got to let you in there. Well, just call John. You know, Mr. A?
Yeah.
He can get you a card. Douglas K. Southard, Superior Court Judge. One question. Does it look different than it used to?
It looks hugely different. People tell me, oh, we went to Stanford. That's such a beautiful, fancy, schmancy school with all those gorgeous buildings. And I'm thinking back, I was telling you the story before.
Right. When you were going here.
Yeah, when I was going here, things were pretty rough. And we had some fairly substandard housing, which...
You said you lived in a house that had been condemned for 20 years?
It was an old Victorian in Alvarado Row. And actually, I had broken my... collarbone playing intramural football and was in a body cast, and I got body lice from the house. It was so dirty.
We better cut it out. Stanford's going to shut us down. But it's much different now, isn't it?
It's very nice now, yes.
There you go. And you picked some wonderful music today, music emblematic of that period of your life, around 68, 70, 71, 72. You want to speak a little bit about the theme of the music today, if there is one?
If there's a theme, it's just whatever popped into my head. Mainly, the Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, to me, is very emblematic of the 60s, the sorts of thought processes we as young people were going through at the time. So pretty much every song brings back some memory for me. It's not something I sit around and listen to all day. I've got pretty eclectic interests. For coming back to the farm, it's a great thing to listen to.
Yeah, we can't relate to kids' music nowadays, but... we're close enough in age that I remember when Crosby, Stills, and Nash hit, and they did have big messages in their music, and it really affected the kids of that day, didn't it?
It did. It did. And the song you just played almost cut my hair. I kind of went through this process myself where I was trying to decide if I was going to legitimize my looks in order to make it a smoother path in the real world.
What did you decide?
Well, you can see the hair is it's still there. I think that's the main things. I still got it at age 63.
But did you cut your hair for the job?
I did. Yes, I did.
That was a big deal back then, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, it was.
Because like, if I don't cut my hair, I don't get the job. But I need a job.
It's
so
kind of like letting your freak flag fly.
And, there you go. Whoa!
We're all trying to be, you know, individuals, and now we do it in different ways. My continuing protest is I refuse to wear a coat and tie. To work. I just,
on the bench?
Yeah, exactly.
Really? What do you show up in, like sweatsuits?
Or I got on, I wore a sweater or a golf shirt or something like that.
And you guys still wear robes?
We still wear robes, and I figure that's authoritarian enough.
Superior Court Judge Douglas K. Southard, and please don't call up and ask him if he can fix a ticket for you, okay? We'll take care of that on the back end with Deputy Kuhn. Right now, some more Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and why Sweet Judy Blue Eyes? Why did you pick that one, Douglas?
That one actually reminds me of the time I was at Stanford in Germany, and it was a very popular song at the time, and we were there during the winter and were sitting around down in kind of like a little Ratskeller basement area drinking beer on Fridays. And
beer in Germany?
Oh, yes. that's where I discovered beer. Yeah.
And, that's real beer back there.
Real beer. And, yeah, I couldn't drink Coors for years after that.
I hear you.
Having the good stuff.
Soda pop.
Yeah.
But what do you remember about that, sitting around drinking beer?
Just the
how did that remind you of
the camaraderie. And this, it's a kind of a bittersweet song about love, lost, and et cetera. Many of these songs are in that particular time frame.
Okay, let's check it out. We'll get some more memories out of the judge right after this.
Sometimes it hurts so badly I must cry out loud.
I am lonely.
I am yours, you are mine, you are what you are.
Give back it
hard. Remember what we've said and done and felt.
Don't let the past remind us of what we are not now.
I am not leaving.
I am yours. You are mine. You are what you are.
You make it hard.
Tearing yourself away from me now. You are free and I am crying. This does not mean I don't love you. I do, that's forever. Yes, and for always.
I am yours, you are mine. You are what you are.
You make it hard.
Something inside is telling me that I've got your secret.
Are you still listening?
Here is the lock and laughter, the key to your heart.
And I love you.
I am yours. You are mine. You are what you are.
You make it hard. And you make it hard. And you make it hard. And you make it hard.
Thank you. be my lady.
Just wishing that my life would simply cease.
Fellas, a little Crosby, Stills, and Nash for your listening pleasure. Just reminiscing here in the studio, 1970 grad, Stanford graduate Douglas K. Southard, Superior Court judge now. That's a big leap from Stanford grad. And what did you grad? Was it law that you graduated in?
No, philosophy.
Get closer to the mic.
Yeah.
Philosophy?
Yeah, I actually came from a very religious household, and so philosophy seemed like a natural to ask the big questions. But also, I really wanted to major in history, but it was so friggin' crowded. There was like 200 people in a class, and I wanted a little bit more individual attention.
Did you just say friggin'?
Friggin', yeah.
Can judges say that?
I think they can.
You can on the radio. Friggin's cool. The other one isn't. But
yeah.
So you picked philosophy, and how did that go over with the folks?
They thought I was dewy-eyed idealist who is never going to make a living. But it also occurred to me that if you're really serious about being a lawyer, which I was, that was my ambition since high school, that philosophy is actually probably the best major because you learn to think and write very analytically, and it trains you well.
Will it help you get into law school, or did it?
I don't know, but I know a lot of really good lawyers who were philosophy majors. So,
really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, in that era that you came up, you graduated Stanford 1970, the draft was raging.
Yes.
And you got a number.
I did.
It was a high number.
It was a very high number, thank goodness, because I was very active in anti-war politics around campus.
Really?
I participated in the AEL sit-in and
wow.
got guests.
You were part of the April 3rd movement?
Yeah.
You remember Lenny Siegel?
Oh, yeah.
He's been a guest?
I've run into him in courts before.
Really?
Yeah.
Was
his travels.
Yeah. Did he have come before you mean?
Or no,
you
just no, saw, no, oh, no, no,
just
saw him.
He was around. Vietnam tore a lot of families apart because the parents would come down one way, the kids would come down another. How did it affect your family?
It was, I consider myself really lucky because I was from birth very patriotic. My parents were farm folks from the Midwest. My dad was a sailor on a troop transport in World War II.
Mm.
And saw, like I said, his job was to take in the young, beautiful Marines and take out the body parts and wounded. And
rough job.
Yeah. And so I was brought up feeling very patriotic and wanting to serve my country. And then Vietnam came along, and my rational mind couldn't get my head around it. It was so, to me, unnecessary and illegitimate. And so I was fighting against it in my own way. The thought of being forced to go over there and fight it has certainly stressed me out. But as I said, I was quite lucky. We all sat around the fraternity house, I think it was in November of 1969, getting drunk, listening to our numbers being read off. And
They had the lotto on TV.
It was on TV at least, or on the radio. But,
yeah. And you'd listen for the birthday, and whatever birthday came up, that number was that. And
exactly.
Did you have friends that went, that got caught up?
I did, and it was kind of lucky. Most of the folks that I knew that were like in ROTC or something like that, they got the low numbers, and the guys like me who were ambivalent or worse got high numbers and didn't get challenged. But a lot of people did. They had to make tough choices on what to do.
And then there were those other kids, like our last president, who got a pass.
That's true.
Did you know kids like that here at Stanford?
There was a lot of discussion about ways to get out of it. Just like in my line of work, I think it's a cottage industry, ways of getting out of jury service. And back then, we had a lot of talk about how to get out of the draft. So.
You know, that the fact that you brought that up, and I've gotten jury duty several times, and I've always wanted to get out of it, but isn't that really the core of, if we're not all into that, then what are we doing trying to be a democracy?
Well, that's my feeling, and I try to restrain myself when I encounter the jurors, potential jurors, who are obviously lying to try to get out of jury service.
Yeah.
On the one hand, ultimately, we don't want people like that on our juries, but I use it as a... hopefully a teachable moment to remind people of all of the benefits they get from citizenship and the very limited nature of the responsibilities they have. They don't even have to vote. All they have to do is obey the law, pay their taxes, and sit on a jury once every few years.
Right.
And, there's not even a draft anymore.
Do you ever think to ask them, sir, just think of this as your ass up here on this line. Want somebody nice in there?
I try to make it in a very nice way. Remind people, hey, you enjoy... and believe in the Constitution, I presume, and the Constitution promises a right to a jury trial of 12 disinterested citizens. And to make that constitutional promise a reality, we need jurors. So by doing this, you are affirming the Constitution and 200-plus years of history, and making yourself sort of part of the ages, part of that promise. And most people connect with that. Maybe I might say a little bit more eloquently in the moment, but most people connect with the responsibility and do it willingly.
That's good. 1970 Stanford grad Douglas K. Southard, now Santa Clara County Superior Court Judge since 1988. Let's back up a little bit. You were a graduate of Hastings Law School in 1975.
Correct.
You went into private practice, but it didn't last long. You became a deputy DA for Santa Clara County from 77 to 88, and you became the first high-tech prosecutor. This is the meat that I want to get into. This show is more about the music usually, but when we have interesting characters on, such as yourself, Your Honor, this is amazing. So... what year was it that they made you the first high-tech prosecutor?
I think it was around 1980. We had one big case that had come down the pike, and the attorney who was handling the case went into private practice, and they looked around the DA's office for somebody to handle it. Everybody else was computer-phobic, I already had my own personal computer. I was the first guy in the office to do it and had taken computer programming classes for fun back in the early 70s.
And they were awkward back then, too. They weren't fast.
When I took programming, we were doing punch cards.
Yeah, and you didn't have a laptop back then, right?
No.
There was no email.
No.
So you were in a different kind of a world that, you know, you were kind of alone out there in a sense, right?
Yeah, I guess I was a little geeky. So I volunteered when everybody else ran the other direction. And ironically, as these things often happen, this became a turning point in my career because by doing the high-tech crime over the years, I met people and had interesting experiences and ultimately met the governor a couple times, and he wound up appointing me to be a judge.
So, which governor?
That was Duke Majan.
Wow, a long time. He's still with us, right?
He certainly is. He's practicing law in Los Angeles.
Is he really?
Yes.
Why? Because you don't hear too much from him anymore.
Well, he did his bit, and he went about his business.
That's amazing. What a career. Now, we could spend 2 more hours on your work just as the first high-tech prosecutor. And when you say the first, do you mean in the nation?
To my knowledge, yes.
It was Silicon Valley.
Silicon Valley, and things started happening here, and it was a full-time occupation. We had so many different kinds of cases.
I want to touch on that just a little bit, because before the show, you told me some incredible stories. There was a hit put out on you from somebody you helped prosecute.
Correct.
We can just mention that. And we hope it's not still on you anymore.
I assume not. The gentleman's out of prison now and seems to be rehabilitated. But for 5 or 10 years, I was still worried about it.
I hear you. Who wouldn't be? You were in on a couple of giant, huge cases. And without taking up too much time, why don't you just pick the one that really sticks out in your mind, the biggest, and just kind of briefly run it down, what it involved.
The most interesting, and I think the one with the biggest implications, was a case involving a gentleman named Peter K. Gopal. And he was a genius engineer who was kind of, unfortunately, a little bit of an evil genius. And to make a long story short, he would bribe people who worked within the high-tech companies such as Intel to steal their integrated circuit design details, take them out of the company where he would copy them, and then return the physical evidence back to the company.
So nothing was real, no physical stuff.
Nothing physical was gone. Mm-hmm. And he would take the data that he had obtained that way into a front company he had in Switzerland and work it up and then sell it to the East Germans and the Soviets. And the way the crime was discovered, and when I say crime, he was ultimately charged with 27 counts of trade secret theft and possession of stolen property. And the trial I put on took 3 months. It was so complex. And the way he was caught, though, was at that point in time, Syria was tossing some Soviet missiles over at the Israelis. One of them was a dud. When the Israelis took it apart, they found Intel chips in it. Whereupon Moshe Dayan, who was the head of the defense ministry, or maybe prime minister at the time, mm-hmm. called Andy Grove, a Holocaust survivor who was the CEO of Intel, and said, you know, what the heck's going on? You guys are selling chips to the Ruskies. And Andy Grove took it very seriously, put a whole team of basically forensic engineers on the case to dissect the physical evidence they had found. They discovered that they were not Intel chips. They were copies of Intel chips that had been made from these stolen trade secrets.
Mm.
And he managed to trace it all back to the perpetrator and run some sting operations on the guy. And so we got him pretty good.
Amazing. And that case involved international intrigue.
It did.
State Department and government stuff that they didn't want to allow to get in the court and talk about, right?
To a certain extent, although later some of it was aired, I testified before the U.S. Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations when it was chaired by Sam Nunn, and he did a whole week-long investigation of Soviet industrial espionage, and that was part of the big picture.
Now, have any of these cases, these type cases, come before you since you become a judge?
Unfortunately, no. The attorneys locally that I used to spar with, who were the defense attorneys in high-tech cases, always recuse me. So
that's terrible.
I went
man.
From doing, frankly, the most sophisticated types of criminal cases really you generally see to doing DUIs and petty thefts because nobody wanted to have a judge who really understood the stuff.
You would be the one to have, though, wouldn't you? Don't you think?
You'd think so.
But they have the right to do that, to say we can't have him because he worked on that kind of stuff?
It's just kind of like on a jury. You can kick off jury members on a peremptory challenge for no reason. You're limited to the number you can do. You can do the same thing with the judge. In each case, you can kick off one judge for no reason.
Really?
Yes.
Don't give me any ideas, Judge. You're a surfer. Douglas K. Southard, our guest today, Stanford grad, 1970, now Superior Court judge here in Santa Clara County. You surf, too.
I do, yes. That's,
where'd that come? Well, being brought up in Southern California?
I grew up in La Jolla, and it's kind of like if I grew up in Aspen, I'd be a skier. I grew up in La Jolla. I'm a surfer. So I was a lifeguard during summers during college, and I've just surfed since I was about 13.
You surf up here?
I do, although not recently. The cold water of Northern California is getting a little much for my 63-year-old body, but I do surf in San Diego area a lot and occasionally go to Fiji or Hawaii. Try to stay away from the big waves, though. I'm getting a little too frail for that.
I hear you.
At least too cowardly.
It's a rough sport. Yeah. And don't go to Mavericks.
Okay.
So we got some Beach Boys.
Great.
Queued up.
Yeah.
That's a nice segue. Okay. What are we going to play by them?
I think we're going to do Surf and Safari.
All right. Here it is on KZSU's Lunch Special.
Let's go surfing now. Everybody's learning how. Come on a safari with me.
Coisa mais linda, mais cheia de graça, ela menina que vem, que passa, um doce balanço, caminho do mar. Moça do corpo dourado, do sol de Ipanema, o seu balançado é mais que um poema, é a coisa mais linda que eu já vi passar. Estou tão sozinho. Ah, porque tudo é tão triste. Ah, beleza que existe. Ah, beleza que não é só minha, que também passa sozinha. Se ela soubesse que quando ela passa, o mundo sorrindo se enche de graça e fica mais lindo por causa do amor.
Like a samba that swings so cool and sways so gently that when she
Okay. We've been having so much fun around here. We just, the show was kind of secondary. We're just, this is like old family reunion around here. And see, Your Honor, Douglas K. Southard, this hour went by so fast. You know, radio time is like dog years. It just goes by. Yeah, you don't even notice it.
I thought this was going to be a long time to fill, but it's gone by like a flash.
Now, what I just found out is you were in court this morning with the robe on.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going back after this.
Absolutely.
I feel honored now. This is amazing. Thank you so much. We just played some Sly. We played some Beach Boys. We played Stan Getz and Gilberto Gil. Not Gilberto Gil, but João Gilberto.
Yes.
Wow.
That was great music. Even our producer, Blue Velvet, listening to it on the way in, had a comment about it and loved it, too. What is that the kind of music? And we played Nirvana, too. Now I said, hey, Nirvana, come on, Your Honor. Most people that come before you wouldn't even believe that you listen to Nirvana. What's up with that?
I love it. Well, I've got kids. I've got grandkids.
Was that it?
And,
that's how you got turned on to
it? My kids... love music, and so I listened to what they were listening to, and I just something about that song just hit it with me. Just the exuberance of youth and the all the big questions that are being asked, the anger, everything else. It just kind of sums up modern youth to me.
Okay, yeah. Can we get your opinion on Public Enemy?
No.
Flavor Flav?
I don't know if there's anything I can say on the air about that.
All right.
Not to my taste.
This has been great. We want to get you back to, once again, Douglas K. Southard has been our guest, 1970 Stanford grad. Came here in 66 and had the wonderful story about, well, please, we got a minute. Tell a story about the first day you got here, and you're here, 1966, your button-down collar, crew cut.
I'm the straight arrow high school football player, straight-A student, geeky sort of kid. And I'm wearing my khakis and my button-down Gantt shirt.
Penny loafers, too?
Penny loafers and short hair. And I arrive at Stanford, and we have a freshman mixer, a freshman get-together. This is September, I guess, 1966.
Mm-hmm.
And I had grown up with the Beach Boys and with Little Motown and stuff like that. But I was not much more radical than maybe occasional Rolling Stone song. And so we get here and we go to this this dance, and they've got this band playing, and they're playing this just funky stuff, and they're just look crazy. They got long hair. They're all like, look like bums to me at the time. And I said, who are these guys? And they said, it's this new band called The Grateful Dead. And that was my introduction to Northern California music scene.
And after, within 2 years at least, you were living in a Volkswagen bus with your girlfriend. You had long hair.
Yes.
And everything around you was funky.
It was. I was going to, Big Brother and the Holding Company concerts and watching Janis and all that other stuff.
Yeah. Welcome to California. Yeah. Welcome to Northern California.
Yes.
Douglas K. Southard, thank you so much for the time.
Okay.
Your Honor. And look,
we're going to end it here with a little music. We go from the sentimental to the sublime. This next piece is, to my mind, one of the greatest pieces of music ever written in terms of its ultimate simplicity, but its absolute precision. Frankly, it often makes me cry. I don't know about you, but we'll see.
Let's see. We're going out with Beethoven. And thanks once again. Your Honor.
Thank you.